Well, those are pretty tough words from the prophet Jeremiah. He's very critical of the people because they are resorting. They fear that the signs in the heavens, and because they're afraid, they build deities that they can worship, made out of wood and decorated with silver and gold. And Jeremiah is wanting to remind the people that actually the God they worship is the true God. He is the living God. Well, as I say, this is Education Sunday. And it's interesting that the word education comes from two words in Latin, educare and educare. There's only one letter difference. In the first word, educare, the letter is A in the middle of the word, and educare, the vowel in the middle of the word is E. Educare and educare. Together, they form our notion of education. But they're very different words in terms of what they mean. Educare is a word that means to train or to mold or to lead people towards those that are being educated. It's a bit like what we experience in school. You know, that notion of school being the transfer of knowledge from a teacher to a student. You must have had that experience, as I did. You know, you're taught things you can't understand and then asked to prove that you've remembered it. That sort of transfer of knowledge, of information, from the student, from the teacher to the student. I remember one of my university lecturers taught us Boolean algebra. And he had a terribly difficult time connecting with his students. He would walk in through the door of the lecture theatre and rub his nose against the blackboard and start writing. And 50 minutes later, he'd finish writing and walk back out the door again. That's an extreme form of educare, the transfer of knowledge, which we were supposed to. I was pretty rubbish at Boolean algebra, I can promise you. It didn't make a lot of sense to me. So that's one form, educare. And there's an important role for the transfer of knowledge and information to students. Educare, that's with the letter E in the middle of the word, is a different kind of concept. It means to draw out. And what is being intended in that is that we give students the opportunity to explore and to express their inherent abilities, their creativity, and their potential. And the best example I have of that is a teacher who taught or tried to teach me Old Testament Hebrew in seminary. I wasn't a particularly good student of his, but what I do remember distinctively about his work was that he would nudge and he would encourage and he would cajole us to absorb the language of the ancient Hebrews so that we could enjoy reading the Old Testament in its original language as he did. What he was seeking to do was to draw out of us the potential that existed within us to be able to celebrate the Old Testament in its original language. Well, drilling down into those two ideas of education maybe gives us a few insights as to what's going on whenever any of us are involved in education. We are interested in what is being communicated, the knowledge that is being transferred, and interested in the skills that are being developed that help us to learn for ourselves and to bring out of who we are the best of what we have and the potential that we have. Let me give you an example of the first. On the 10th of July, 1925, this story actually is situated in a small town in Tennessee called Dayton. Now, that's probably not a town you visited. Wanda and I have been there many times, and I'll explain why. Wanda, her father, who was an evangelist, had a Christian campground in the hills above Dayton, Tennessee. Now, the reason Dayton, Tennessee, a small town, is so well recognized and is being remembered 100 years after that event on the 10th of July is that on that occasion, John Scopes was brought to trial for teaching evolution. At the time, the Tennessee legislature had passed a law that said evolution may not be taught in schools. But he had broken that law, and he was brought to trial in Dayton, Tennessee. Now, what happened was it became quite a circus, because actually it focused the struggle between science and religion that was very, very hot as a concern and issue for many of the fundamentalist Christians in America. So John Stokes was brought to trial, and it was an event that got so much national attention that 200 newspapers across America sent their best reporters, and the fledgling radio stations of the country were all there with their microphones to report it. What is interesting is that some commentators suggest that was the catalyst or the watershed for the continuing tension that exists between conservatives and progressives or liberals in the United States today. Because John Stokes was actually found guilty. He was charged a fine of the grand sum of $100, and he went back home out of the state to where he had come from. And his story ends. But what happened was that the fundamentalists, whose intellectual credibility was questioned and who were humiliated in terms of their arguments and their defense, took that opportunity to begin to build their own institutions, their own publishing houses, because they no longer trusted what was being offered by the public sector. And some people would suggest, if you want to understand the people who elected the current president of the United States, the roots of that go back those 100 years to what happened in that trial in that small town of Dayton, Tennessee. Now, I tell you that story because, of course, things move on. And when we talk about education as the passing on of knowledge, what we pass on changes over time. And we try to stay current with what humanity understands and knows in what we teach our children. So content is important. That's the kind of thing that we need to pay attention to. What are our children being taught? But then the other aspect, the educare, is also important, because we want students to also be curious, to have critical thinking, and to be creative. And the fundamental quality of those kind of features of what it means to be a child, what it means to be an adult, come not because we are taught information, but because educare, we are being invited to draw out of ourselves those skills that help us to live in the world, those skills of curiosity and critical thinking and creativity. Now, there was a person who lived a very short life. She was a French woman by the name of, by the name of Simone Weil, who was very keen to emphasize the importance of that learning which comes from within. And she said the most important quality that we need to possess is the quality of attention. And that's something that we find very difficult in our modern day, because there's so many distractions. We rarely spend enough time paying attention to different things that are happening in our lives and in our world to be able to truly understand the depths of them, the fundamental qualities of them. Perhaps this is one of the reasons why Mark Twain, some of you may remember Mark Twain, he wrote those famous stories of Tom Sawyer and Huckleberry Finn. He had a particularly scathing comment to make about education, or at least schooling. He said, "I never allow my schooling to interfere with my education." And some of this learning to pay attention comes through our exposure to everything else that's going on around us, and not just what happens in the school. But the skills to be able to pay that attention can be nurtured and cultivated in a school setting. So education is not an easy thing. It's a challenge. There are difficulties in being able to understand and make sense of the world. It needs us to be able to be receptive to information given to us, and also to dig deep into ourselves to develop the skills that enable us to nurture curiosity in critical thinking and creativity. What's all of that got to do with the church in its work in education? Well, maybe we should turn our attention to how Jesus saw education, learning, and realize that he is our best teacher. And as we move to that thought, we're going to sing a hymn, actually. It's an old hymn, but one that perhaps puts into words of prayer an invitation that we might learn of Jesus. So we're going to stand and we're going to sing, "Teach Me Thy Way, O Lord." I don't know whether you've got some sympathy with Mark Twain's observation that he wanted to be sure that his schooling didn't interrupt or disrupt his education. All of us, of course, have been to school. Some of us have gone on from school into further education, into higher education. But even after we've finished our formal education, as we might call it, we go on learning. We are all lifelong learners. In every day, we move into the world to discover new things. We have new questions that we haven't had an answer to and that we seek to explore. Learning doesn't stop when we leave school. We're lifelong learners. Some people have suggested that life is the university of hard knocks. And it's those disruptions, those surprises that occur to us that are wonderful opportunities for learning. So if you're alive, you're a learner, right? Unfortunately, well, perhaps it's a new challenge for us, artificial intelligence is actually taking care of all the hard work for much of the things that we want to know. It's now quite easy to put a question into one of the large language models and it'll give you the answer. You don't have to work very hard for it. Rowan Williams, who was the former Archbishop of Canterbury, said that if you don't have to put much effort into learning, you probably won't remember it, or words to that effect. If it comes in easily, it doesn't sit and it doesn't last. Because he said one of the qualities of good learning is to recognize that learning is difficult. It's hard to learn because it does disrupt all the things we thought we knew. It requires us to expand our horizons, to think beyond the edges of what we thought we knew and what we thought we could do. So Rowan Williams goes on to talk about the importance of silence as one of the critical elements of what it means to be able to pay attention and to learn from life experience. Now, he's not talking about the sort of silence that we go into when we try to find a little quiet corner and be on our own. He's talking about the kind of silence that happens, for example, when we are given a medical diagnosis that frightens us and we feel lost for words. What can we say? And for a moment, there's nothing to say. We're just simply left with a brief moment of silence. There's an opportunity there for learning. He talks about the example of a piece of music in a concert and coming to the end of the music, and there's a brief pause before the audience breaks into applause. That moment of silence is the moment of absorbing the experience that has occurred through the music. Now, there's not a lot of learning in that brief gap unless we go back and reflect on what in fact is happening in that moment. And in those moments of silence, there is something going on that disrupts our sense that we're in control, that we know everything, that we know what we need, because it's pushing us beyond what we have already understood to learn something new. And the skill of learning is our ability to experience those moments of silence and to learn from them and to recognize and appreciate the way it expands our horizons and takes us deeper into what we need to know. So the invitation, really, for all of us as learners is to stop and listen, particularly to those moments when we feel we can't say anything, we're at a loss for words. It's something like learning to listen is a discipline. It's something we have to work at to be able to make work. It may be something of a coincidence, but the word listen, L-I-S-T-E-N, if you spin around those letters, you get the word silent. L-I-S-T-E-N, S-I-L-E-N-T. And maybe that's the important quality for anyone involved in lifelong learning. Listening in the silence. Rachel Remen, a highly respected cancer physician, tells us a teacher is someone who has learned to listen to life. From a good teacher, you may learn the secret of listening, but you will never learn the secrets of life. You will have to listen for yourself. So a final thought. Though we can learn when we're alone, we often learn much better with others, sharing our stories with one another, challenging each other a little in terms of how we interpret those moments of disruption in our lives. And we can listen together. While we're so grateful for the hard work and the dedication of teachers and the schools and colleges and universities in which we learn, I think the church itself should also be a place of learning, because it's here that we will hear most strongly the invitation of Jesus that was just read for us. Take my yoke upon you, Jesus said, and learn from me, for I am gentle and lowly in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. Here's another quotation from Rachel Remen. Perhaps real wisdom lies not in seeking answers at all. Any answer that you find will not be true for very long. An answer is a place where we can fall asleep as life moves past us to the next question. And for all these years, I've begun to wonder if the secret of living well is not having all the answers, but in pursuing unanswerable questions in good company. That seems to me to be an excellent way of thinking about the church as a space of learning. A church isn't an organization, it's an organism. And it's a learning organism that together, as we share our stories, as we listen to each other, as we enter into the experiences of how our lives have been disrupted in different ways and try to find meaning in them, we grow as an organism. Paul calls us the body of Christ. That's not an organization, it's an organism. And as a learning organism, we can all grow together towards the fullness of Jesus and all he intended for us. So I invite you. I think Jesus is the best teacher. Amen.